Hey, it's Melissa from Melissa in the Morning on WICC 600. And thanks for checking out the podcast right here. If you want, you can always subscribe, share, and like it. Hope to see you guys soon. Thanks. Hey, Mayor Martin, how are ya?
Well, good morning. I'm very good this morning. How are you?
I'm doing just fine. Thank you so much for asking. I was very excited as we were heading into the weekend last weekend to hear about the partnership between Stamford Health and City of Stamford and administering COVID-19 vaccines. What can you tell us about this partnership?
Well, essentially, I don't think anyone it would be surprised to know that Stamford Health does an excellent job. And the city has its health department, and rather than go in different directions here, when resources are very limited to get this vaccine out, we decided to partnership together. And in fact, the partnership, I guess, well, although we had officially started earlier, yesterday we'd been working with Stamford Health to set up a vaccine supercenter. Supercenter, maybe that's not the right word, but essentially it started up yesterday. I'm actually going to be, I'm about 2 hours away from my biweekly meeting to update myself on all the COVID numbers, particularly over the weekend. But we were anticipating doing about 600 vaccines yesterday, and by the end of the week, hopefully up to 1,000 a day.
Wow.
So that's one site is at Stamford Hospital, and we just signed an agreement. I'm going to announce this whether I'm permitted to or not. we have a second site that we are going to be running in conjunction with Stamford Health, which will also be hopefully ramping up to around 1,000 a day, and that's at One Elm Crop. That's at the tip of the south end where Pitney Bowes used to have its headquarters.
Oh, sure. Mm-hmm.
So we'll have that up and running, and with, you know, cross your fingers, provided we get the vaccine from the state, because that's the limiting supply.
Mm-hmm.
You need a facility where you can have lots of parking and you can have indoor. You know, there's lots of things you need, and we've got that with Stamford Health. Then you need the staff, and it isn't just the people that put the needles in the arms. You need staff to manage what's going on in the parking lot. You need staff to make certain we get all the entries into the computers right.
Mm-hmm.
We need someone to make certain that there is no terrible reaction with anybody that's taken a vaccine. So far, that hasn't happened. So that's the second major requirement. And then the third requirement is the vaccine.
Yes. So. Yes. That's kind of the big one there. Yeah. I was going to say, I mean, 1,000 a day that, you know, at both locations, that was going to be my question to you, Mayor, is, you know, what communication are you getting from the state? I would imagine you're in very close contact with Governor Lamont, but what are they telling you? I mean, to project 1,000 a day at both locations, that's great. But are they saying that that's you know,
Melissa,
is that plausible?
I wasn't done yet. I want another 1,000 after that. So we've got that one, and now we are working to find a third site, and we haven't nailed down a third site yet, but we're looking to, and the way I look at it is you got your three problems. Well, the first problem to solve is the facility. So we are anticipating that there will be more vaccine out there a few weeks from now, and therefore we're trying to get the facilities up and running whether we've got the vaccine or not. Now what we're hearing, well, first of all, it changes every hour.
Yeah, and no kidding. Yeah, you're right.
There's a logistics pipeline back there, and as we've tried to make decisions, the state has tried decisions, there are things that have to change. There are things that, you know, that do change. And so if you ask me what's the story is, well, last year we ran out of the Moderna at the Stamford Health Department. We did, as my last count was, about 450 people over 75 years of age within the Stamford Health Department, as well as our police and fire and our ambulance drivers and our 911 people, all of our first responders that are absolutely critical to public safety and health. And we had gone through all of those. And I think we're starting our second shot this coming week. So we had done that. And then we did a few hundred over 75 when we ran out. And we could have done, you know, with the resources that we had, we could have done another 500 to 1,000 over the Martin Luther King weekend,
mm-hmm.
provided we had vaccine. Meanwhile, and what I've been told is that there'll be no Moderna available this coming week, and so be it. But the Pfizer vaccine is in large quantity apparently this week, with the Stamford Hospital receiving several thousand Pfizer vaccine this week, so that's what they'll be injecting into people's arms. And that's part of the reason we partnered with them. they have the cold storage ability to keep that Pfizer vaccine where nobody else in the city of Stamford does. And
that's huge.
Quite frankly, I'm not certain that the immediate neighboring towns have it either. Maybe they do in Greenwich, but I don't think so.
Mm-hmm.
So whether there's a lot of Pfizer available or whether there's a lot of Moderna available, either way, in our partnership, we will make maximum use of it in either way. And before I sign off here, I just wanted to mention we are also working with CHC, Community Health Centers, who runs a facility on Fifth Street, and we're helping them to establish a site, they're trying to establish a drive-through site. And I think we've gotten the ink signed on where that location is, but it isn't up yet. But I understand it will be up by the end of this month. So today's the 19th. In about 10 days, they'll be opening another site in Stamford, and I don't know what their capacity will be, but they're not opening to do 10 a day. They're mm-hmm. opening to do a lot more than that.
Mayor Martin, I actually wanted to tell you that I wanted to give Stamford kudos. So last week, we were taking a lot of calls, understandably, about questions with the COVID vaccine in Phase 1B. Stamford was the only city/town in our listening area that does an online portal where people can easily get their appointments scheduled. You guys were the only ones I could find that make it so easy for people. And I was just curious how you guys were able to do that versus any other town or city. I did not see that anywhere else.
Would you accept it if I said hard work and good leadership? Would that be an acceptable answer? Or people that are throwing snowballs at me?
I know. No, I mean,
so I hasn't snowed, so I guess I'm safe.
I thought it was astounding. I thought it was very astounding. We got a listener who called in and said, hey, you know what? Just so you know, if you're a Stamford resident, it's this simple. And I thought, well, that's awesome, because I couldn't find that anywhere else. Everyone else had to use that line or the portal from the government center. And I just thought to myself, wow, at least Stamford residents, they got a little bit easier. I thought it was really, I just wanted to say kudos. I thought that was really cool.
Well, that's part of the reason why we were able to get a jump. I mean, there were a few cities that had these 75 years or older, and the instructions were just changing mm-hmm. Constantly. But what happened was we realized that we could do the 75 and older, but that a lot of people hadn't signed up.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wanted to make certain that it was available to everybody. And so we decided to stick our necks out there, to be honest. And the other part of this is that I've gotten mixed reviews from the federal sign-up things, VAMS, V-A-M-S.
Yes.
I've gotten mixed reviews, and there's two or three parts to this, Melissa. One is, well, the mixed reviews, but the second part is that a number of the people 75 years and older didn't really have computers.
Correct.
And,
right.
And you know, we sometimes forget about the digital divide. It's mm-hmm. not just some of the very youngest that have to go to school with remote learning or off of a hybrid or whatnot.
Right.
It's also some of our most elderly people don't have these phone hookups, or they are flustered by some of the online systems. And so we were basically saying, hey, call us and we'll fill out this form for you. Now, we end up having to set a whole separate form to get around this VAMS limitation, but that's what we did. And then what we started to do is we were randomizing that list. So it was kind of like a lottery, and the sooner you call in, the more lotteries you will get into. But we had, last count I understood, we had about 5,000 people,
wow.
Mostly over 75.
Wow.
We were only able to do 300-400, and in some cases we were calling up and saying, hey, we have this, can you get down here in a half an hour?
Mm-hmm.
And I got to tell you, it's hard to talk about joy during this pandemic, but there were people that were so thankful for
yeah.
so little that we were getting done.
Yeah.
In any event, now we have to somehow get that data over into the VAM system as in our partnership with Stamford Health. I mean, Melissa, every day is a new challenge.
No
some
kidding.
Of them of
yeah.
our own making, because we want to do this as fast as possible.
Right.
The sooner we get more vaccine into more arms, the more people's lives we will save.
Yeah, that's very true.
And
well,
so we're, I listen, you talk to my staff and they'll tell you, yes, we're crazed about trying to make this work and make it work as fast as possible. And the last part of this was something that you said, we tried to make it easy. That has been one of a thousand frustrations during this pandemic, is that we wanted testing to occur. And nationwide, we wanted a testing to occur. Well, you got to call your primary care physician.
Oh, it's a whole
and then
you got to
get a script from him, and then you got to call a place, and then you got to see about your insurance. I mean, we made it just about as hard as possible. Now, it started to get easier. You can now walk up. I think we've got a dozen different testing locations that are going on in Stamford, and some of them require insurance, but many of them are free. And if you go to our website, stamfordct.gov, and you'll see a link right there on the front page, one link to, you know, sign up on our Google Sheets. So if you want to sign up there, which is a little bit easier to do than the VAMS, but there's also a website there that says these are the testing sites and when they're open and those that are free. And I tell you point blank, we're trying to make it as easy as possible. I'm not claiming it's easy. We're making it as easy as possible. We want to make it as easy as possible to get a vaccine. Let's take away as many barriers as we can. And if we do that, then more people get tested. And the more people get tested, the more likely it is that we can put some brakes on this thing. And the more people who get vaccines, and it's not just breaks, or we're going to take the car keys away from this terrible virus.
Well, I appreciate it, Mayor Martin. Thank you so much, and we look forward to checking in with you again in a couple of weeks.
I'd love to do that. In the meanwhile, to you, to all your people, the vaccine's here, but so is the coronavirus. It's still about wear your mask, social distance, wash your hands, no big parties. Don't be the last person in this terrible pandemic to have to go to the hospital with your loved ones or for yourself and lose so much.
Absolutely. Mayor Martin, thank you so much. We appreciate it. We'll talk to you soon.
You bet. Thank you.
Thank you. Mayor Gassetti, thanks for coming on this morning. How are you?
Good morning, Melissa. Good morning. How is everybody doing?
We're all hanging in there. Thank you so much for asking. There's
that's
a lot
important.
Happening in Ansonia, and we want to dive into it. First of all, one of the big things that's going on, a lot of people talking about, the new police station. What's happening there?
Yes, we're taking the old engineering building from Ferrell Corporation. It's 65,000 square feet with underground parking. And what we're doing is we're converting it into a new police station on the top floor. It's a $12 million project underway, and I'm hoping for a grand opening between June and August as the target date for the grand opening to get them relocated right here on Main Street, which is a good thing for our city.
Yeah, what kind of prompted having the new police station? Like, has it been
Actually, I was a police commissioner before I was mayor, and I had entertained it back in 2004, and it brought light to the subject, and people started talking about it. It wasn't until I became mayor that I really put my foot down and said, I think we need a new police station. The current one that we have is outdated, and I didn't want any kind of lawsuits or anything because our cells ain't proper. So we looked at a couple of locations, Olson Drive, where the old housing project was where I really wanted it. And then we ended up taking the engineering building. But that started it all off back in 2004.
Wow. So this is an $11 million project. It's expected to open, you said, by the summertime?
Yeah, summertime it should be open. Yep.
Wow.
Yeah,
very cool.
We're hoping and the police will have a brand new home. And underneath, there's another floor. I should remind you, there's another floor. And we're going to be putting the senior center, a regional senior center, on the bottom floor of that building because it's such a large building.
Yeah, that's a big complex. Wow, that's really cool. So is that opening around the same time?
No, that's going to be a little bit later on in the year, probably towards the end of this year, that new senior center will be underway.
That's beautiful.
And we're looking to regionalize it with either Seymour or Derby.
Love that. I love that concept. That's fantastic. Yeah. And I mean, talking about projects, I mean, here's another huge undertaking that Ansonia is taking on. 400 apartments on Upper Main Street. What's happening there?
Right. That's the ATP Palmer and the processing lab of Ferrell's. these buildings have been sitting idle for the last 40 years. And what I said was we need to generate some kind of income because right now we're collecting nothing on that. So we brought in a developer who looked at it, showed interest, it wants to do it, and it's currently underway. And he's currently remodeling all these apartments and getting this underway. And the bottom floors will be commercial. We have an agreement with IHOP restaurant to come in to serve. And, you know, Ansoni doesn't have any breakfast places. And I figured, you know what, that would be a perfect fit.
Yeah, it's a great fit. No, nothing wrong with IHOP. Now,
you know, Ansoni's going through a renaissance right now with different things. It's unbelievable.
I love that. I love that idea, too, that concept as well. Now, with the apartments, Mayor Cassetti, when can people start putting applications in? Because that's great.
Yes, that's a good question. That's an excellent question. We're probably not going to start the application process until April. But we will. We have discussed it with the developer, and he has discussed it with us that he does want to have an application process. These are going to be market rate apartments, single bedroom, and this is for people that, you know, work down the line, Bridgeport, Stamford, New York, because our train station is right outside the door there.
Oh, that's excellent. That's really great. Talking to Ansonia's mayor, Mr. Cassetti, this morning. And Mayor Cassetti, what is the latest with COVID vaccinations? Obviously, every town and city is putting together their plans to roll it out. They're working with different partnerships or different sites. What's the latest for Ansonia?
Right. We're working right now with TEAM and the Ansonia Rescue Medical, which is ARMS for short. They are working together to get vaccination to our elderly people in our town. Right now, we are 38% elderly and fixed income in this city, and we're trying to get them, the most vulnerable, situated for the vaccination.
Okay. All right. And, I mean, at this point, how are things, you know, looking as far as your application process, people, you know, getting in to get the vaccine? We know it's only 75 plus. How has Ansonia been handling that process?
No, they've been doing a good job. I mean, our chief of ARMS has been working together with the different organizations to get people in there to get their applications filed.
All right. One more thing I wanted to touch on, Mayor, just because I try to bring this story up as much as possible. I know most other news outlets will wait for an anniversary or for some kind of breaking news in the case, but any opportunity I could talk about this little girl, I do. And that is, of course, Ansonia Toddler talking about Vanessa Morales this morning. What has this been like for Ansonia? I mean, it has been the center of this awful disappearance, this homicide investigation.
Right.
What has it been like being mayor when this little girl disappeared? Over a year ago.
Yes, it's been over a year. I mean, the police have due diligence on this issue. I mean, every day they're working on it. It is sad, but in my heart, I'm, as the mayor, I'm confident. I feel that she is still alive somewhere and she is safe. But I don't know why they're keeping it from us.
Mm-hmm.
That's just my opinion, and I really feel confident that she is still alive. But I mean, we're doing due diligence with the police department there. We're looking every day, checking things out, leads that they get, and they follow through with it.
And I think, correct me if I'm wrong, Mayor, but I think I saw late last week or maybe over the weekend, I think police did like an age enhanced photo of Vanessa. Didn't they just release that? Yeah. Okay.
Yes, they did. It was in the newspaper and it was on the Valley Independent Sentinel, an enhanced version of what she looks like now. At age two, mm-hmm. I guess, or two and a half.
Yeah.
And I guess it was thought that she was spotted in California, but that turned out to be nothing.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we know that Vanessa's father is due back in court later this week.
Yep.
So we'll keep a very close eye on that. Ansonia Mayor Cassetti, thank you so much for coming on. We're excited to have you on every 2 weeks. Thank you.
Great. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, appreciate it. We'll check back in with you in a couple of weeks.
Family, relationships, and personal growth. Professional counselor Julius Dudix is here to help.
Melissa in the Morning on WICC 600.
Good morning, Julius. How are you?
How are you, Melissa? Thanks for having me on.
Oh, absolutely. So, I was kind of reflecting during a Martin Luther King Jr. Day, and I was thinking about where we've come as a nation and where we sort of fall short. And it sort of ties in with the fact that the inauguration's this week, there's been a lot of political divide. And it really dawned on me, Julius, that I think we look at sort of these surface problems like politics or religion or things of controversy. But to the core, and I don't know if you agree with this, I do think sometimes one of our biggest divides is the fact that generation to generation, things are very, very different. Like my generation versus my parents' generation, the way we were raised, the times that we were living in, the mindsets that we were brought up to believe are very different. So when you come to a world like 2021, you're clashing just because it's based on how you were brought up. I don't know if you agree with that at all.
Yeah, I do. And I think what happens is a lot of times you become taught. Values are caught, not taught.
Mm.
So from grandparents to parents to children, you know, if you want a child to learn how to do something, you model it. And unfortunately, what's happened in different decades of our country's history is we've been modeled some pretty poor behavior. But at the root of it, though, is selfishness and pride. And I want my way, and my way or the highway. And that kind of mentality has just divided families. It's divided relationships. It's divided our country.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know how to compromise, Melissa. And that's the one prayer that I would have for our government, that we learn how to compromise. And how to agree to disagree, and how to move forward. For the fact that our politicians aren't speaking to each other for 6 months, come on. We're paying them to be quiet. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of a, you know, on a political landscape, it's a little bit frustrating on my end when I think about it, but I only control what I can control.
Right.
But we don't know how to compromise, the bottom line.
Yeah.
And our tongues get us in a ton of trouble.
That's true. I mean, I think, too, you know, when you talk about things that you're in control of, I talk a lot on this show about the fact that I'm literally only in control of my actions, my behaviors, my reactions,
yes.
things like that.
Yes.
And you know, I realized, because my parents and I have a very, very mutual respect for each other. We disagree about a lot of things. And I realize a lot of it is because of generational differences. You know, when you talk about racial divides or different mm-hmm. movements or things like that, we don't agree a lot of the times. But I think the difference between conversations I have with my parents and conversations I'm seeing across the nation is there's just not that respect and open-mindedness of, okay, I could see where you would feel this way. I think a lot of times, Julius, we hear something and immediately we think, oh, you're evil for thinking that. You're wrong.
Yeah.
I can't believe you'd think that way. How could you feel that way? When really, if you take a step back and you're patient and you're understanding with people, maybe you could see their point of view and you have a shot at either changing them or changing the situation or changing even yourself sometimes. And I just don't know how you make people do that. You know, you make people take a step back and think that way.
Yeah, we react to what people say
mm-hmm.
as opposed to how they feel. And whenever your feelings get in the way of your thinking, what happens is you end up saying things or doing things that really are driven by your own selfishness. I think what you're saying is we got to slow down. We just have to slow down and learn how to listen to each other and to listen to what the other person is saying, not only for content, but for intent. What are they feeling when they're saying what they're saying? And we have to build our lives on truth. And that's one of the things that I believe has caused so much division. There's so many different things out there regarding truth. And, you know, we have an executive, a legislative, a judicial branch in our government, and we're going to be okay. Democrat, Republican, independent, we're going to be okay. That's the truth. But you can work yourself up internally and not listen to people, and all of a sudden you find yourself engaged in doing something like what happened at the Capitol, and that was horrific.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, but I think a lot of it too, Melissa, my wife teaches nursery school. We just have to go back to nursery school and learn how to be a kind friend and learn how to share.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And learn how to listen to each other's feelings. I mean,
mm-hmm.
she does a wonderful job teaching children how to be kind
mm-hmm.
and how to share and how to take turns and how to compromise. So a lot of it we missed in nursery school. Some of it was not modeled in our home front. But the bottom line is there's hope
mm-hmm.
because we have a God who's in control and a God who is within us and can help us and give us that power to love. And love is the most important, most powerful force in the universe.
Mm-hmm. Talking to Julius Dudix this morning, and he's our morning show counselor. Julius, what about stereotypes? How do we break stereotypes? Like for example, only because I can relate to it a million times over, I'm a millennial. And I think a lot of times when I was in my 20s, I was mortified to even tell people my age because you knew the typical, oh, you're a millennial, you're privileged. You have no idea what it's like to really work for a job. You have no, you know, and the typical things you hear about the millennial generation. And none of those rang true to I felt myself, and it was very hard to convince people who are of the older demographic that I did not follow this idea of millennials. But on the opposite end of things, it's very frustrating, for example, that people who I love, who are Republicans, are called bigots and are being told that they are don't have hearts and that they're money hungry and that they don't care about the well-being of others. And that's not true. It's very, very painful sometimes to hear these stereotypes. And I think that's a big reason that we've got these divisions as well. So how do we break having those thoughts in our minds?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, I think a lot of it is going to happen through education. Mm-hmm. We have to educate younger generations of what really happened in the past. And so we look at our past so we can make sure that we don't make the same mistake in the present. I think it starts, in the home where parents are modeling what it means to be kind, what it means to and talking about what bigotry means, and talking about feelings, and talking about how the power that our tongue has. You know, the good book says the tongue has the power of life and death. Mm-hmm. And the bottom line is we cut each other up with our tongue because we have false assumptions about what's going to happen if the Democrats take control or the Republicans take control. And that's where we get into tizzy, because we're not building our lives on really truth. And the truth is, hey, it's going to be okay. It's going to be okay. There's a sovereign force in control here.
All right. Well, Julius Dudix, if anyone wants to reach out to you and get your advice on any of this, where can they go?
They can call me at 203, make an appointment, 203-243-7714. You can read about me on Facebook, but don't contact me on Facebook because I'm so busy I don't look at Facebook. So that's the way to do that. But Melissa, thank you for your work and what you do and bringing attention to all these relevant issues.
No problem, Julius. I can't do it without your help. So thank you so much. I appreciate it.
All righty.
Talk to you next week. Fran Mako of AAA is here this morning. And hey, Fran, how are you?
Very good. How about you?
I am doing pretty well. Thank you so much for asking. I wanted to dive into this e-learning program called Key Timing. What's that all about?
Well, let me give you some background. First of all, many of us baby boomers have parents or older folks in their families that are in their late 70s, 80s, 90s that still drive. And because of the aging process, sometimes physical, visual, even cognitive issues make those folks a very, very high risk on the road.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes adult children know their parents shouldn't be driving. Even the older driver knows they shouldn't be driving because of the number of close calls and fender benders that they've experienced. They know they shouldn't be off the road. But if most families were like mine, there's usually considerable resistance on the part of the older driver, because many of them believe that they're going to lose their independence if they give up the keys.
Mm.
So that is why AAA developed this e-learning module. It's free. It's on our website. We call it Key Timing. And it's aimed at adult children to assist them in talking to their parents about their driving concerns.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also aimed at the older driver to help them prepare for their driving retirement. And in both cases, there are resources available to help people on this e-learning module. It's very simple to use so that both parties could compromise and to come to some kind of agreement about, you know, driving. The website offers general driving assessment tools, state resources for driver evaluations. There's a mobility plan workbook. There's statistics that you could review, and there's also advice for caregivers as to how to have the conversation, you know, to talk about driving retirement. You know, you have to understand, we are in an aging society. There's stats out there that say by 2030, the number of U.S. citizens over 65 will more than double.
Oh, sure.
In this nation.
Sure. Wow.
And in Connecticut, one third of our population is now over the age of 50.
Wow.
And they're expecting by 2040 that our over 65 population will grow by 57%.
Wow.
While the younger demographics are only going to increase by 2%. So Connecticut has a very older, I shouldn't say very old, but an older population. And because we're living longer, because we're the baby boomers, we're a lot
more
healthy.
Had, yeah, and you guys had bigger families. You guys are able to afford, more afford, I would say, living here than like my demo, for example.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. Wow.
But folks have to understand, you know, I when I did my driving improvement classes in person, you know, I would talk to folks about this and say, you know, nobody likes to be told what to do.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody likes to have to give their keys up.
Oh, no, it's awful. Yeah, no, and I can remember when my mom and dad made that decision. Well, my grandmother since passed, but years ago when they had to take my grandmother's license, and it was, I can remember, the one thing it came down to was it's not just even feeling like the independence, it's that, like, mortifying, well, now I have to ask people for rides. It's very much a hard transition for people. It's really,
yes,
really difficult, for sure.
And on this website are resources and options now. The same thing happened to my in-laws.
Mm-hmm.
My father-in-law, I have to say, I thought was the world's worst driver. And he really had some difficulties. And there were two situations, one in which he went through a plate glass window of a furniture store.
Oh, wow.
It was a Sunday afternoon. Nobody was hurt. Another time he went into somebody's living room. And at that point, my husband, I have to give him credit, made the decision, I'm taking the keys. My father-in-law refused to compromise. It was like, if you can't see at night, don't drive at night.
Right.
Drive during the day. There are things that you can do.
Mm-hmm.
And
to sort of pull back.
And he ended up taking the keys. Now, it was not a pleasant conversation.
No, of course not. But it's really, at the end of the day, it's more, I mean, more cases than none. It's for their well-being. And also, you know, you don't want to be on the back end of a lawsuit. Let's be honest. I mean, you don't want to, you know, be on the end where, you know, God forbid they hit someone, or God forbid, like, you know, I have very personal, you know, people in my life who have gone through gas stations or front entrances to, you know, and it's scary. You're thankful that everyone got out alive, but it could have gone a very different way. So it's a hard conversation, but it's one you have to have.
And on this website, there are scenarios that people can go through, caregivers can go through. You know, it's not necessarily going to work 100% of the time, but it is something it's a resource that people could use. I mean, nowadays, well way back when this happened with my in-laws, it became very difficult for us because we ended up driving them wherever they needed to go. My mother-in-law didn't drive, but we made the choice that this was better than having someone killed or they being killed.
Sure, of course.
Nowadays, I mean, you've got things like Uber and Lyft.
Mm-hmm.
Connecticut doesn't have, you know, unless you live in a city like a downtown area like New Haven or Bridgeport, it doesn't have a well-developed public transportation system.
Yeah.
But there are options. Senior centers have little vans that can take people places. You just have to be able to compromise and want to do it. And many people just don't want to compromise. But, again, the option is you can't drive. You may not be able to drive.
Yeah.
You know, and caregivers have looked toward their doctors, you know, and physicians don't want to be the bad guys. I mean, they don't have the authority, I guess, to take a license from an older driver. All they can do is advise. I mean, police officers are put in a very difficult position, you know, unless something happens.
It's not really their job. Yeah,
they make the call if a crash happens.
Right.
To seize a license. But, I mean, there are different options that you could pursue. They may not be the option that you want to hear, but these options are all outlined on Key Timing.
Yeah, and if you want to contact and you want to see what Key Timing is all about, the website is www.aaa.com/keytiming.
Key Timing, all one word.
That's awesome.
And, I mean, it's interactive. It's very simple to use. You can go through. You don't have to do it all in one day. I mean, you can go back several times. But, again, it's a resource for people.
Absolutely, and we could use all the resources we could get, Fran. So thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Okay, great. Thank you for having me.